Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Story Night podcast. We're so glad you've joined us. And if this is your very first time finding this podcast, we highly recommend checking out episode one, where you can hear my conversation with Lucetta and just understand a little bit more about the history and the vision and purpose of Story Night. Now, for several of these first episodes, we want you to meet our Story Night team. That way you get to hear a little bit about why these women value stories and understand who they are and hear a little bit of their stories. Today, I get to introduce you to my friend Charity, and Charity's been with me on this Story Night journey for quite a while now. I'm so excited. Actually, Charity did share her story on our original Story Night podcast, and she was so gracious to come back and share her story again on this new Story Night podcast. So welcome, Charity. Thank you.
Thank you.
And before we start with your story, would you give a brief introduction to our listeners?
Okay. I'm Charity. I'm a mom. I have four kids and I'm a wife. I like to knit and crochet and quilt and do all those fun crafty things. And I teach a class at Calvary in McMinnville for women who are experiencing or have experienced domestic violence and abuse. And that is such a blessing to do.
And so, sadly, so needed.
Yes, unfortunately, yes.
I mean, we're so grateful that you are doing that. Now, that's a really big piece of your story as a leader. But interestingly, it's not really a piece of your personal story.
That is true.
And so many women who are serving in some way have a passion for something because they experienced it. And this is a little different for you. So it's so interesting. And so we're going to find out how you got to this point where you had this passion to help victims and survivors of abuse, even though you hadn't experienced abuse personally, right? Doesn't mean you don't have suffering in your story.
That is true.
Right? There are things in your story that have been very hard and very, very painful. Before I have you, you know, kind of start with your childhood and catch us up to your life today, I wanted to ask why you value stories and what it was that drew you to even helping with the Story Night team. And we so appreciate all the hours you devote and the volunteer time you give to this outreach. But why? Why did you choose to do this?
Stories are important. Everybody has a story. That's how we connect with each other, is by learning each other's stories. And that makes us realize that we're not alone in our struggles. We're not alone in our joys. And we have people that can help us and uplift us and support us in our struggles and celebrate with us in our joys.
I'm glad you mentioned both of those, because I think sometimes our culture can be maybe really good at the celebrating part, but we're not so good at the mourning part, the grieving, just sitting with somebody through their suffering.
People are afraid. Mm-hmm. People are afraid of grief and those struggles, that they're afraid to get involved. They're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing. And really, you don't have to say anything. You just have to be there.
Yeah. The power of listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And what if we all took that time with the women in our lives that we know, or even that we barely know, and actually gave them, you know, 30 minutes to a few hours to tell their story, and you actually know who they are. This happens to me over and over. You'd think after years of doing Story Night that this wouldn't surprise me anymore. But even just yesterday, I had a conversation with a woman who I knew loosely, but I had always seen her in this like other context, and then got to connect with her in a completely different environment. And suddenly we were telling our stories.
Yeah, often, you know, you can look at somebody and think, oh, this person has it all together. Mm-hmm. This person, you know, they've lived a charmed life. And then when you get to know them, you realize that their struggles are a lot of the same. I had a friend one time that really, she seemed above me. She seemed like she had it all together and everything. But once I got to know her, she was just Jamie. She was just who she was. And even though she seemed like that, that's not who she was. You know, she had her struggles. She had her problems. And
she was real.
She was real.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you make that move to be vulnerable with somebody, very often they feel like they can be vulnerable with you.
That's true.
Right. And we got to experience that the first time I met you, which was super
yes.
fun. But I want the listeners to get to know you. So let's start at the beginning, Charity. Where are you from? Tell us about your childhood and your family.
I grew up on the Olympic Peninsula, the beautiful Olympic Peninsula up in Washington. I'm the youngest of six girls. I had five older sisters. My youngest sister is 6.5 years older than I am. So
big age gap.
There's a big age gap. And so I had lots of people to do stuff for me.
You were the princess at the end.
Kind of. I was, you know, I was the one begging them to go catch my pony for me when I was three so I could ride it all by myself. So I grew up on horses and I grew up on a farm. We had horses and cows and pigs and ducks and chickens and all of those fun things and playing in the creek down next to our house and out in the woods, riding horses through the woods. So it felt like a charmed life.
Yeah.
My parents were married for 51 years and a week. Until my mom suddenly passed away from a brain aneurysm. And they loved each other. They served in the church. I grew up in church, grew up knowing who God was and that he loved me. But for the longest time, I never really felt like I belonged. I never really felt like I mattered. And I felt like I was an afterthought and that if I just disappeared, nobody would notice. I think that started in my young teens, 12, 13, you know, and it just kind of gradually warped itself into depression throughout high school. My parents didn't know how to deal with it. That was at the very beginning of antidepressants, and the doctor put me on Prozac at one point, and a nurse friend of ours told my mom, oh no, that people have killed themselves after starting that. So my mom made me stop. And I just stuffed my feelings. You know, that was high school. And in my early 20s, I moved out and lived in North Seattle for a year or so. And I was working in a nursing home. I was barely scraping by financially, supporting myself. And I didn't have any connection. I was working on Sundays. I couldn't go to church. And I just didn't know anybody really there. And
so there was a lack of community.
There was a big lack of community. And so I would go back home on my weekends to visit my parents and stuff like that. And one day I was probably 21, 22. I remember driving back from my parents' house to my little depressing apartment in North Seattle and just thinking to myself that the pain was so, so deep and so overwhelming that the thought occurred to me that I could just end it all if I just drifted my car into the other lane and there was an oncoming truck. That, you know, heaven would be better than what I was experiencing. And then I didn't do it, obviously. And I sang hymns on the way back home. And the minute I got home, I called a Christian counseling service in North Seattle and went to counseling. They provided free counseling. I went to counseling for 6 weeks where I really began to realize that I was deeply loved. I was wanted. I was here for a purpose and that my life mattered. After that, I decided to become a medical assistant. started medical assisting school while I was living in North Seattle, and then it just became too much financially, and I moved back to my parents' house. So I commuted to Seattle from Port Angeles, Washington. And then after I got back, I was working some home health jobs, and I did that for 4 months. And then after school, I found a job in West Seattle, and I lived there for about 3.5 years. But there was different than North Seattle because I was able to find a community. Unexpectedly found some friends that I knew when I was living at home that were living in West Seattle also. So they connected me with other people, and found some really good friends at my job, and just had that community.
What a gift.
It was such a gift. I really enjoyed my time in West Seattle. Because of health reasons, I had to move back home.
At this point, are you still in your 20s?
Late 20s, I guess. The year I turned, well, when I turned 29, I decided to buy a computer, I bought my own computer, and I had a friend that told me, hey, you need to check out this website. And it was eHarmony, the very beginning of dating websites. I was like, no, I do not want to do this. No, 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 no. I will not find my husband online. I do not want to do that. Well, God had other plans.
And just to set the context, I mean, some 29-year-olds are so focused on their career, they're not even thinking about marriage. Maybe they don't even want to get married, while other 29-year-olds might be sitting there going, oh my gosh, time is running out. I need a husband. I want to find somebody. I want to be married. I want a million kids. Where were you on that spectrum of?
I was kind of in the middle.
Okay.
I was making plans. I did not expect to get married. Not that I didn't want to, but I didn't expect to. My expectation was my parents were building a house down in the horse pasture. The plan was that I would move in with them, take care of my parents in their old age. And then after that, I was going to get my RN. As I was there, and I was actually starting to think about going back to school. And then after my parents were gone, I would start adult foster home.
So you had this plan.
We had a plan.
That was an expectation, but it sounds like it wasn't necessarily like your dream and all of your desires, but more just what you thought would happen and this would be a good idea.
Yeah. And my friend convinced me to get on eHarmony, and I was like, oh gosh, no, I don't want to do this. But I was matched with several people, and a lot of them were like, no, no, this one is no. But I was matched with this guy from Eugene, and I was like, well, Eugene's not that far away. And I didn't have pictures at that time, but yeah, maybe. And he seemed able to write. I tell my kids this, your dad used proper grammar, proper punctuation, and proper capitalization. And I'll tell you what, that was rare. That was not the case with a lot of the people that I was matched with. So that's one of the things. And it's like, well, I could do this. And so at each step, there were several steps. I don't know how it is today, but there were several steps you went through. And I was like, okay, well, maybe.
Another maybe.
And then we set up a time for him to come up and meet me. And at that point, I had a picture of him, but he didn't have a picture of me. I didn't know how to put a picture on the computer.
Just kind of a blind date in some ways.
In some ways, yeah. Except we knew each other and we talked on the phone quite a bit. And my mom was really nervous at first. She was really mad, actually, when she first heard where I met him, because she wanted to take out my computer. It was my computer. She was like going to get rid of it, and just she was going to get rid of the phone line, everything. Because back then it was modems. I would get newspaper clippings of girls that disappeared because were abducted by somebody they met on the internet.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine this was not super common or kind of new.
Oh, it was very new. And I mean, this was 2002.
Yeah. Mama Bear's so, coming out like, oh my gosh, you can't just meet a man on the internet.
Yes.
It's terrifying.
Yes. But luckily, gladly, he was who he is. and my mom grew to love him. He came up to meet me in June and early August. We were talking marriage.
So just a couple of months.
Just a few months, yes. Yeah. And so he talked to my dad, and my dad was, well, do I have a choice? But yeah, of course, by that time, my parents knew him pretty well and were okay with it. My mom was okay with it by then. We planned the wedding. We got married in October. I was 3 weeks from my 30th birthday.
So you just barely got married in your 20s.
Exactly. And he was 30. So, you know, we were older, but we got married. I moved down to Eugene and got a job and just, you know, worked. And
now at the beginning, you mentioned that you have four children.
I do.
Right. So now you found your husband, you're settled. How did motherhood come about?
Well, I really didn't know if I was going to be able to have children because of prior health issues. So I convinced my husband that we needed to start trying right after our first anniversary. He wanted to wait at least a year. I'm like, well, it could take a while, so we need to start trying now. Well, in December, I found out I was pregnant. So...
So clearly the health issues did not.
So clearly there was no issues there. And then Ellie was born in August. And then Miles came along 18 months later. His birth was a little traumatic. So I was like, no, I don't want to try for a while. And so we waited. And then Henry was born almost 5 years after Miles. And then because of my age gap, when I was growing up, I didn't want a tag along. I didn't want one just at the end. So I convinced my husband we needed another one. And I really wanted another girl. And he told me I wasn't guaranteed. I said, I know. But I got her. And she was born a week after my 40th birthday. And by that time, I was done.
Then you were
I was
done.
Like, yeah, I'm done. Can't do another
one. The
girls
as the bookends and the boys in the middle.
Yes. Yep. And so my oldest two are adults now, which seems really weird. Henry's a high schooler. Amelia's middle schooler. I'm entering into that new phase of having older kids and being a mom of adults, which I think is probably scarier than being a mom of toddlers. A lot more worry.
So you get your wonderful husband, you get four children, now you're 40, right? It's like you can kind of maybe take a snapshot of your life from age 30 to 40, that decade, and say, this is wonderful, right? But there's a season in there that probably every woman listening has experienced in some way where it feels like the hits keep coming.
Yeah.
And it just sort of, it's like piles on. And you think, am I ever going to catch a break? Why is it one, you know, tragedy or grief or trauma or hardship or suffering or whatever, one after another, after another, after another? So maybe you can share a little bit about that season where everything just piled on.
I think it started with Miles's birth. It was traumatic and he was in the NICU for 5 days. He was pretty fragile, it seemed like. That was hard. Then 9 months later, not even 9 months later, my husband was diagnosed with testicular cancer. That hit hard. Fortunately, that was easily treated. He didn't need to go through chemotherapy, but he did do some radiation. We actually had to postpone his first radiation treatments because his brother-in-law in Nebraska was killed in a farming accident. So we traveled to Nebraska with two little kids. Miles was about 10 months old, I think. Ellie was two. And that was a hard, hard thing. And then 6 months later, my mom passed away from a traumatic brain aneurysm. And that was really hard. My mom was one of my best friends. Because of the age gap between me and my sister closest to me, my mom and I had a lot of time together in those teen and preteen years, and we became really close. I felt I had a responsibility to take care of her because of other things, which is another story that's not mine to tell. But it was like losing my arm.
Yeah.
It was horrible. And I sank into a depression again, understandably. And I pulled myself out.
Do you feel like rewinding the tape all the way back to when you maybe were in your darkest place, like mentally, emotionally, and you had those counseling sessions? Did any of the things that you learned in that time come back years later to support you?
Totally. I had to remind myself.
And that's kind of a rhetorical question.
Of all of those things,
you know,
I had to remind myself and had to, and I did.
Yeah.
Because I knew where it would go.
Right.
And I was a mom and I couldn't.
You can't go down.
I can't go down.
Right.
So, you know, you just do what you have to.
Right. I think so many times we make the mistake of thinking we can, you know, maybe take care of our mental, emotional health one time and it's just going to last, as opposed to this being something that you have to do constantly. And, you know, it's like exercising. You don't do one workout and that's good for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And there's so many different aspects to depression and reasons why. And it's nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to even hide. You shouldn't hide it. Sometimes you need medication. I personally do sometimes, you know, and that's because there's wiring and brain chemicals that need help.
Need it, right?
Sometimes you can get through with just counseling or just pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. And sometimes you need both.
Yeah.
That's where connection comes in,
right.
Really a lot. I had a lot of people that surrounded me at that time and really supported me. I knew I could call on a friend to go water my plants or take care of something at my house while I was up at my parents' house dealing with end-of-life issues and funerals and all of that. And so that was so special to know that there were people I could call.
Yeah.
That community is really, really important.
It is. And that's such the heart of Story Night.
It is.
It's trying to help women find that community, because there are so many ladies I hear from that feel like they don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that person that they can call to help with the kids or come help them clean or like just talk at 3 a.m. when they're really struggling, whatever the need is.
Yeah.
We as a culture, hopefully can start to do better of offering those things and showing up.
Yeah. And it's hard to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always one of those people that wants to help, but
yes, you are.
But I don't want to ask for it. I don't know why. Well, I kind of know why, because that's not how I grew up. I grew up, you help yourself.
You know, I have to share this one line because it stuck with me for all these years. And it was actually from a conversation I had with a lady in the original Story Night podcast. And she had lost her husband to suicide and they had 9 children. And she was in that spot of complete grief and processing so many emotions and trying to take care of 9 children. And the community wanted to rally around her and help, but she was having a hard time accepting that help or even knowing what to ask for. Cause you're in such a fog.
Yeah,
you don't even know what you need. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend had come over to offer her some help, like just showed up and said, I'm here. I'll clean your kitchen. I'll do your laundry. You know, I'll take the kids outside, whatever. And the lady I was speaking with was just kind of trying to say, well, thank you, but I'm fine. And her friend said, look, when I help you, I get a blessing. It blesses me to help you. And so she kind of gave her like a little stern talking to and said, don't steal my blessing. And then suddenly it like flipped it around, right? When we, you know, deny people who are genuinely offering help, we're stealing their blessing because it blesses them to be helpful and kind and caring and generous. So
yeah,
I just
it's still hard to ask for help.
Yes.
Even when you know that. And a lot of times, like you said, it's hard to know what you need.
Yeah.
And
so at this point, you've had two pretty tragic losses. You're in a stage of life that's already hard, being a mom with two little ones. You've had the scare of your husband's cancer.
Yes.
Which thankfully turned out okay, but that's still a lot to go through.
And dealing with the effects of his radiation.
Right. And then your son had a big health turn.
Yeah. When he was three, when Miles was three, he was diagnosed with juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And it was pretty severe. His knee swelled up to the size of a softball. It was in almost all of his joints. So when we came back from the rheumatologist, we were on prednisone and methotrexate. And so I had to give him nasty tasting medicine and give him shots. And that was just so hard.
Just hearing how your story unfolded, it's always pretty amazing to look back and see, oh, these things of the past might have happened for a reason. And they might have been preparing us for something that's to come. And just knowing how much time you spent in that caregiving nursing world.
Yeah.
And how that, I would imagine, helped to some degree.
It helped a lot because I knew how to give the shots and I knew how to manage the healthcare system. I knew how to navigate it. I've actually been able to help a few people whose kids have been diagnosed with arthritis and help them navigate how to park at the hospital, introduce them to the doctor, tell them this is where we get our eye doctors because we went to the eye doctor shortly after his diagnosis because it often affects the eye. And then we came home with eye drops.
Just keeps on piling up, right?
Eye drops. So yeah, we had nasty tasting medicine, shots, and eye drops just piled on this three-year-old within a time of like 2 weeks. He didn't like me for a while because it was me doing it. My husband helped, but I was the one giving the medicine. I was the one giving the shots, and I was the one doing the eye drops. He was the one holding him down. And now he's 19. He's in a medicated remission.
Okay.
So he has no signs of arthritis, but he is on medication. And he's been on that medication since he was four. We tried taking him off of it once when he was five, and it lasted for 4 months. And then it came back with a vengeance. So we haven't done it again because it scares me. But now I'm trying to help him learn how to navigate all of the medical stuff that he's going to have to do because he's going to have to, you know, get his meds. He's going to have to arrange his appointments with the rheumatologist and with the eye doctor and do all of those things. So.
Well, Charity, you've touched on so many really key chapters in your life, feeling like maybe life wasn't worth living, going through a whole series of, you know, traumas and tragedies that piled up all at once. And those are not light issues. Nothing you have said is a light issue.
No.
They've been heavy. They've been hard. You've gone through some really true dark times, but none of those chapters were about abuse.
No, none of them.
And here you are serving in such an important and needed way as the facilitator of a healing group for victims and survivors of abuse.
Yes.
So before we close our episode, I was just hoping you could share with the listeners, maybe you can briefly tell them what this is, and we will include these links in the episode notes, ladies. And also, why? What drew you to that, to serve in that way?
I actually didn't even think about it until I met you.
There is, there's a story there. We won't go into the whole thing,
but
within a couple hours of meeting Charity, she asked if there was any way she could help with the church team I was working with at the time. And sure enough, there was a need, and we really were hoping to start that support group, that healing group. And it was amazing. You just dove right in, you caught up, you went through the leadership training, and really, really started that.
And it was not really even on my radar until you said something, but I knew there was a need. I have people that I love that were abused in the past. So I knew that there was a need for support and for women learning how to navigate those things, because it's difficult, because abuse changes your mind. When somebody speaks to you and tells you that you're not worthy, that you're worthless, that you're at fault for the way they treat you, that changes who you think you are. That changes your perspective in life. I knew that the healing group, that her journey is, would take care of that. You know, it would help women. And that's what I'm about, is helping women. And it forms community. It shows people they're not alone and that there is hope. That's what I want to tell everybody.
Yeah.
That's what I want to give to the world, is sharing that you're not alone. And all of us have experienced trauma. I've gone through some really hard things, but there's people out there that have gone through worse, things that I can't even imagine. So that doesn't negate what I've gone through, but it does make me understand that everybody has their hardships. Everybody has trauma that they have to deal with. And so what I loved going through the leadership training for her journey was that it could translate to anyone. It helped me. And, you know, I'm not a survivor of domestic violence or abuse. It helped me deal with the trauma that I've had in my life.
And it is so needed. I think when we start really telling our stories, even though the topics might be very different, often the emotions can relate. You can relate with the emotion of whatever somebody went through. My personal story is different than your personal story and all the women on our team, but we've all felt grief or sadness or loneliness or uncertainty or fear. Like all the emotions that are underneath those topics are kind of universal.
They are.
And we can understand each other that way.
Mm-hmm.
Charity, I want to thank you so much for taking time to go through your story and go back through the hard chapters too. I think you've spoken some encouragement already to women, reminding them that they are not alone, right?
No.
Is there anything else you wanted to say to those listening who just might be in a really dark place right now?
There is hope. Don't let that darkness win. There's hope and there is light at the end of the tunnel. Reach out to someone. Tell them how you're feeling. Tell them your story, because if they know, we can relate. Everybody's had some issues, and just talking about it can help a lot. Don't keep it a secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're thinking about harming yourself, get help. Call the suicide hotline. Call a friend. Call a counseling office and tell them, I need help. They can connect you. It's hard to reach out when you're in that darkness, but you can do it and you are worth it. You are loved. One of the things that stopped me was realizing the grief my mother would go through. There is someone out there that will go through a grieving period if you are gone.
Very, very true and powerful words. And as always, we will have any links and resources available in our episode notes. Charity, I want to thank you for being part of my team.
Oh, thank you for letting me.
It's always fun. A joy to work with you. And I'm so grateful for all your help over the years. Ladies, if you are within driving distance of McMinnville, Oregon, we do have our next live story night event coming up on Thursday, May 15th, 2025, featuring Bethany Palacios. And she'll be sharing her story of how an orphan from West Africa became an American beauty queen. So you don't want to miss her inspirational story. Ladies, you can sign up for free for that event and find so much more at the Story Night website. So please visit us at storynighthope.com. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. All the links are in the episode notes. And we want to thank you so much for tuning in and being part of this Story Night outreach. And thank you so much to Representative Lucetta Elmer for providing this platform of Story Night. And so real women can continue to share real stories of real hope. We hope you come back next time. And until then, remember, you have a story. And your story matters, and you are not alone.